Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to All Exits Close. My name is Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Ian Schlachman, who is running for president on the Green Party line. So, Ian, would you say that your campaign is heating up, and how are you?
I'm good, Cynthia. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I would. The Green Party, we just had our first national debate, and before that we had a ton of state and caucus debates. A lot of the Green Party caucuses sponsored debates. We've definitely been traveling all across the country and engaging folks of all different kinds in the Green Party, and really talking to them about some very unique issues that I don't think you're hearing about in the two mainstream parties.
Can you articulate some of those issues? Or at least give us
sure.
a brief overview. Okay.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I think, for us in the Green Party, I mean, we talk a lot about election integrity. I don't know if you or your listeners are keeping up, but Jill Stein is continuously back in the courts fighting in Pennsylvania in particular to make sure that the voting machine companies have to open source the code, which means basically show what's inside the voting machines so we know that they're tabulating properly. Believe it or not, that's not a requirement when they buy the voting machines. Election integrity, stuff like that, ranked choice voting, proportional representation, other important stuff is reparations. That's been a really big one for the Green Party candidates. I think we all have different takes on reparations. And engaging internationally in the world is another very big one. And then how fast we're going to respond to climate change is another big one for the Greens as well.
Mm-hmm. How about the issue that you and I have talked about, the student loan debt crisis? Has that been addressed at all?
Yeah, I think we've definitely been talking about that quite a bit. And I can't speak for the other candidates. I don't remember their positions on it, but I do know that, the Greens are very out front on this issue, wanting to cancel student loan debt and wanting to make sure that college then remains free for students in the future who go to college. There's been a couple of different takes on it. Some people want to make all college free. Some people want to make just public institutions free or two-year institutions free. Actually, that's not true. I think the only place I've heard the two-year institutions should be free and just two-year institutions is in the Democratic Party. I don't think I've heard that coming from a Green Party candidate. I think most Green Party candidates agree that it should be a four-year, but I can't speak for everybody. Certainly, that's what I've heard.
Okay. You mentioned two-year, four-year. What about people who want to go on to graduate degrees? Has there been any talk of, making that affordable or free?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big differences, at least for my campaign, is that if it's a public university, we definitely want to make it free. And we feel that because it's public, there's a path to do so. I mean, you can make sure there's funding that comes into the public schools. Public universities, and that can apply to graduate courses as well. I mean, it's clear as day that we need more people to be graduating from doctoral programs of all different sorts, and engineering programs and accounting programs, and all of these programs require graduate degrees, but we never really talk about the path to get there and the crippling debt that it's going to take that you'll be straddled with. So, I think that's really important to mention that is something unique coming from the Green Party.
So, the Green Party presidential candidates, they're talking about you and the other candidates are talking about specific issues. When you listen to the cable news, when you watch the debates on TV, What's your reaction compared to what the Greens are talking about?
Well, the Democrats just seem to be a party in the past right now. The Republicans as well. It's sort of just a comparison of a party stuck in the early 1900s, or maybe even the 1800s, like the Republicans, and then the Democratic Party that seems to just not be able to get into the 21st century, or even the 20th century. And what I mean by that is, the Republicans, I think, by and large, with Trump or without Trump, agree that, we could just have unlimited growth on this planet and everyone could just be rich if they just try enough hard enough, and everyone that doesn't try hard enough is just a failure and doesn't deserve any money, and so it's okay that they're poor. That still seems to be the way it is under Trump. The Democrats, I think, are struggling whether or not the U.S. should join the rest of the world in modernizing. And, I think you see a lot of the debates for the Democrats dominated by whether or not to have Medicare for All and what Medicare for All mm-hmm. means. Kamala Harris, Senator Harris, proposing that, maybe it can mean keeping big corporations around for a little while longer. And other ones just blatantly saying, well, we want to keep corporations involved permanently and just make a public option. And, the rest of the planet has progressed past this issue and recognizes the value of making sure every single person has equal access to health care. In the U.S., we just don't want to admit that that's someplace we should be going. So I think that the Democratic Party is fighting that out internally. I think you see the mainstream media like MSNBC and CNN sort of letting them have it, calling those ideas maybe even socialist and not capitalist. And, here in the Green Party, we don't really have that problem. I think almost every candidate running, maybe there's one or two, but we all sort of embrace the term socialist. We all have very different implementations of that, but I think that socialism is not a bad word in the Green Party. In fact, I think with the current climate catastrophe and the economic realities in the U.S. of so many people not being able to lift themselves out of poverty, you're sort of I personally feel that you should be explaining why you're not a socialist at this point if you're running for office, because socialist solutions that put people before profit and take care of folks, regardless of whether or not people are going to make a buck off of it, are the name of the game, I think, going into 2020 and beyond.
Okay, when you use the word socialist, I'm sure you've been watching and you're aware of the pushback to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and how they're trying to diminish her message, that they're trying to diminish her voice. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about people who do not conform to the, corporate media, how they're being diminished?
Well, I appreciate the question because it's an important one. I guess I just want to start by saying the way that Congresswoman Cortez has been portrayed by the media, but then also by some fringe right-wing groups has been abysmal. I mean, it's been disgusting sometimes. I don't know if you've seen some of the stories of people making cardboard cutouts of her or making these ridiculous caricatures. I think that kind of culture has been around for a long time, and now finally it's getting some discussion. And I applaud Congresswoman Cortez for speaking out about it, because this kind of crude and revolting and just disgusting internet culture that goes on, that we don't really talk about very often. It kind of sits there in the backwaters of the internet and gets forwarded usually by extremely right-wing folks, is a really important thing to bring to light that this is happening. And it's disgusting and it's repugnant, and we should all be against it. If you want to debate someone on their proposal, go ahead and debate someone on their proposal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that being said, I feel the media is really partly to blame, especially the mainstream media, because I feel like because of her age and because of her political positions and because she uses the label socialist. In fact, I know some of the socialists that helped get her elected in New York. She's not, I wouldn't say that the media takes her very seriously. And I think that's shameful. You know, I really do. You know, I think the Democratic Party basically ran on feminism in 2016 versus Trump's, maligning women, and then to not take, you know, a rising star in your own party like AOC seriously, I think speaks volumes to what that agenda really was about. So it's disappointing. But that being said, I think that some of her policies and proposals could be seen as, they're definitely socialist. I don't know if I go as far as to say revolutionary socialist. I think there is some intention in what she's proposing in her version of the Green New Deal to be more revolutionary. But I mean, the second you create a work that speaks to changing the economy fundamentally, the Democratic Party is going to slam that down. And they did. I mean, you know, they basically offered a resolution for the bill to come up as a resolution, not a law. And, you know, it's completely toothless and it's not really going anywhere. So, you know, it's a little bit shameful in my opinion. And I think the Democratic debate stage sort of shows that. It's not exactly clear if it's along generational lines, but I think it's generations of different people that have joined the Democratic Party. I think that's sort of clear on the debate stage. You know, if you're an old school Democrat like Delaney, who's been around for forever, you're clearly, want an old school style Democratic Party that promotes, gentrification and slow growth economics and doesn't really have any answers to climate change or people that are suffering from medical debt and that kind of thing. But if you're a newer school, newly activated leftist, like AOC, or even like Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders only recently joined the Democratic Party in his long political life, I think you're seeing them pitch something very, very different. I think that party has a lot of work to do to straighten out what its message is going to be. And I also think that the mainstream media is just being brutal when it comes to accurately portraying the policies of these candidates. And it's so focused on the horse race of, you know, who got who, what one-upsmanship happened last night. You know, it's like a debate drama rather than actually talking about the issues at play. It's disappointing, but at least the candidates are able to get a little bit out of what their vision is. And I think that some of them are articulating a reform socialist vision for the U.S., and that would certainly be different than what we have now.
The vision that the Green Party members have, and as you know, I'm friendly with Howie Hawkins and also Steve Greenfield, who ran for Congress in the 19th District of New York. Their vision is so much different than the corporate candidates. So when you guys, you, Howie, Steve, and the rest of the Green Party espouse issues that are to benefit humanity as a whole, and you're not being covered as well as you should. Does that upset you?
It does. It does because I've been a socialist for quite some time. I know Howie's a socialist. A couple other folks are socialists. I know Dario is a socialist who's also running. For there's all different kinds of socialists. I think Citadon's also a socialist. And, you know, there's different kinds that mean different things, and they have different prescriptions for the economic situation that we find ourselves in. And I feel like with the mainstream media, it's so narrowly focused on, you know, socialism versus capitalism, and basically everything that is not for profit or not, you know, that someone can make a buck off of is described as socialist. I guess that's one interpretation. And it's so ridiculous. Almost anything that's seen as for the public good is for socialists. I often say, why don't they just consider firemen and policemen and library socialists at this point? Because the way they act, like they are. The Green Party, you know, we have all different kinds of people running with us, all different kinds of socialists and different economic outlooks. I mean, for myself, I consider myself an anti-capitalist and a revolutionary socialist. So I don't believe that we could just make a couple of reforms to what we have going on right now economically, and that will be okay. I believe that we need to fundamentally change the economy, you know, to make it human rights-based, to make it centered on what humans actually need to live, you know, what people actually need to survive. That's like housing and food and clothing and shelter. Beyond that, in a modern society, what do people need to actually thrive? I mean, you need good education. You need access to the internet these days. You need a whole host decent transportation to get around, which could look like public transportation. You know, like to rethink the economy from the ground up, and what it would mean to actually serve people and the planet, rather than to just serve corporations that just want to make endless amounts of profits and sort of fix things as we go. Because if you look at the climate catastrophe that we're in, there was just a flash flood down here in Baltimore yesterday. It took everyone by surprise, and it decimated a large part of the downtown corridor that was built on a hexacycline dump, and so now they're worried that they'll see large pockets of cancer from this stormwater that was spewing up all this old chemical product back from the industrial ages. It's horrible what's going on. It's unprecedented. Nobody thought things were going to move this quickly. If you're seeing what's happening, I think it's in Greenland with the ice sheets that are melting that they just predicted wouldn't be melting until like 2050 or 2070. I mean, it's absolutely horrifying. And I think that the only thing we can really do right now is just, completely redo the economy from the ground up and start to fix everything that's emitting carbon, because, you know, I mean, there's an organization out there called 350.org.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure your viewers have heard of it. 350.org
right.
exists because they didn't want the parts per million of carbon to go over 350. And it's now at 400. And our atmosphere has never seen 400 million, parts per carbon like that before. So we're way over the warning signs that scientists have told us about. So at this point, you know, the next step would be to, by government intervention, systematically change the way that we produce electricity, that we drive around or go to a public transportation system. I mean, that's the only real path forward, and it's you know, the longer we wait, the more painful it's going to be. That's the number one thing I could say. I'm for efforts that are, you know, I work with the Sierra Club and other folks. We do good work trying to get coal fire power plants shut down and stuff like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we had a revolutionary socialist government that was saying, you know, no, they're going to be shut down tomorrow and solar panels are going to be start to be built this minute because we can't afford to wait another second. I think that's where we are. And I sort of struggle when I don't see that viewpoint on television, but I do see them saying things like, oh, the seawater is melting, the ice sheets are melting. And it's like, well, you're not really prescribing any solutions. You're just scaring people just to show a headline, and you're not saying what needs to be done to fix it, because they don't want to fix it, because there's no profit in that.
You know, a lot of people in this country, and, you know, I particularly feel so much sympathy for young people, you know, like yourself, because when I was like your age and I went to college, the phrase was upward mobility. Upward mobility in mm-hmm. this country is a thing of the past. So when people are struggling on the one hand and they hear the word socialist and they kind of shudder and, you know, quiver and say, oh, no. You know, we live in a capitalist country. You know, maybe tomorrow right. I'll be rich. How do you enlighten people that, you know, socialism or, you know, a new way of thinking is better than what you're dealing with, you know, your mind frame now?
Yeah, I think you're seeing a lot of folks respond to it more than ever before. I think younger folks, especially folks even younger than myself, and I'm 34, are seeing that, you know, we will have mass extinction events on this planet if we don't do something soon. You know, the Extinction Rebellion is sort of sponsored off of that concept. I mean, we've kind of went from stopping climate change to now talking about stopping extinction and really harming ourselves, which I think is a good way to think about it, because I think slowly but surely you'll start to see climate change creep into almost everybody's life. With hotter summers and more wetter winters with more snow, I can't say that we're gonna change the minds of every person, but making sure we have a majority that understand that climate change is a reality and that we have to do something about it soon, or else, it's not hard to tell someone whose house just flooded, you know, that this is a result of climate change and here's what has to be done to fix it. I worry that we don't have anyone in government that's saying the part about fixing it or even the part about climate change. I mean, you know, we sort of just let the market take care of this stuff. So if your house floods, you know, get flood insurance. You don't have flood insurance, too bad. You know, it's sort of it's a real dog-eat-dog system. But I do think that younger folks are not just younger folks. I do think that folks could be receptive to it if we phrase it. Like, I like to phrase a socialist economy as a human rights-based economy. Like, right now we are not taking care of every person's needs. You don't have a right to housing, per se, in this country. You don't have a right to a good job or a decent level of income. So I think that rephrasing it and saying that even if there are factors outside of your control, such as, you know, let's say you're a truck driver and the trucks are now all automated and they're driving themselves, you know, like, that's out of your control. There's nothing you could have done to prevent that. The government should play a role in making sure that you're not destitute, making sure that you're not living on the street and your children are going hungry. I mean, it's sort of that simple a concept. And I think that the Medicare for All debate is really informative, because if we say that we want a medical system that is completely government run and doesn't have any profit motive, you know, then why can't we say that for other industries? Why can't we say that for housing? Why can't we have a housing program where people just get housing if they need it, you know, if they can't afford housing. Why can't we expand public housing to be that goal? You know, the mm-hmm. same thing with the education system. We don't have to have a for-profit education system. We could be talking about making sure every person is able to go to school, you know, based on where they want to go and what they're interested in, and, you know, filling jobs. I mean, that would be another important role. You can incentivize folks to take certain jobs, to start certain careers, but it starts at the education level, starts at high school or college. You know, I mean, you can go on and on and on in every single one of these industries, the food system too.
Right.
I mean, right now, I mean, the food system has a ton of waste. We throw out a ton of food in this country. And then when it's being produced, it's produced with a lot of oil, meaning, you know, the tractors and the trucks that take it to market and that kind of thing. And even the chemicals being sprayed on food. So, I mean, you could mm-hmm. say, you know, shouldn't the government intervene and say, yes, you could produce food cheaply and faster by genetically modifying it and spraying it with tons of chemicals. But if people are then going to die from those chemicals, isn't that sort of ridiculous? And shouldn't we have the government step in and, make sure everyone gets fed without food doused with tons of chemicals and that they're for your family? So I think there are opportunities to introduce the concept to folks. And I do think that's why the corporate media is so dead set against going down the path of Medicare for All, because they know that once people in the United States get a taste for, medical care that's paid by taxes and otherwise free out of pocket, they might demand that same kind of thing in housing. They might demand that same kind of thing when it comes to education. And that's something that I don't think they want.
Okay. Well, so this is a conversation that definitely will be continued. Would you be interested in coming back on All Exits Closed and, you know, tell us how your campaign is going, and most important, how the Green Party is doing nationally?
Yes, of course, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're going to see more national Green Party debates and just more media coverage from there. So I'm excited to be doing the show today and always happy to come back.
Thank you. So you've been listening to Ian Schlachman, and he's a Green Party candidate for President of the United States. So if you like this show, follow us on Twitter, All Exits Closed. Thanks, Ian. We'll talk again soon. Have a great day, and
thanks,
thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for listening.